Le'ilui Nishmas, a young man by the name of Donnie Morris, Zichrono Livracha, and all of the other holy neshamas, the special and beautiful and treasured Jews whose lives were lost, who passed away last week in the tragedy in Hebron, in Hebron. And our limud should be Le'ilui Nishmasam. But the truth is that the Rabbeinu Shalom orchestrated it such that the topic for today was actually something that I had been planning before that happened last week. This is our first chance to learn since then, which is why we're dedicating the learning this morning to their memory. But this theme, this idea, was actually one that I had been thinking about before, and now it becomes even more apropos, as you will see. And I actually did not give out the letter for this morning, and you'll see why, because of exactly the theme that we're focusing on today. So let's begin with an interesting observation. I actually brought a different, I wanted to show you, I brought a different compilation of this book than we have used in the past. This is a new version that I was able to get through interlibrary loan. This is called Jewish Identities, 50 Intellectuals, Answer Ben Gurion. It's another English translation of these letters. So just if you're interested, you can get a hold of this. Rashi in two places in Sefer Bereishis, once in Perek Chav Ches and once in Perek Lamed He, makes a really interesting comment. Rashi says, Eini Yodea. I don't know what this is meant to teach us. And why does he do that? If he doesn't know what the pshat is, so just don't say anything. But the Lubavitcher Rebbe, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, he observed that Rashi is trying to model something for us. You know that the Rebbe was very into understanding Pirush Rashi on Chumash. It's something that he emphasized. He said, understanding, knowing that you don't know is a very important principle. Eini Yodea, I don't know. Rashi tells you that not just for intellectual honesty, but he wants to model for us the understanding that when we encounter something that we don't know, we should be honest with ourselves. We should understand that also. That's the issue that we want to talk about today. So there's an interesting Gemara in Brachos. The Gemara in Brachos is discussing Moshe Rabbeinu standing before the Egyptians on that final fateful night of Yetzias Mitzrayim, the night before Yetzias Mitzrayim. Moshe Rabbeinu tells Paro, you know there's going to be a final plague. And when will it be? When will Makas Bechoros occur? Anybody remember? Moshe Rabbeinu tells them it will be Kachatzos Halayla. Around midnight. Around midnight? Why doesn't he say it'll be exactly at midnight? Which is what the Rabbeinu Shalom told him. It'll be exactly at midnight. So the Gemara says, why did he say approximately midnight? He says, Kasavar, he thought, Shema Yitu Itzdagnine Paro, maybe Pharaoh's, the astrologers would miscalculate slightly. V'yomru Moshe Badaihu. And they'll say that Moshe, he's a faker. Now, by the way, that itself is interesting. Some of the Bali Musar point out that how off could they be? 5 minutes or a half hour? And then all the Egyptian firstborn. So they're going to say, oh, Moshe Rabbeinu. Yeah, the guy's, he doesn't know what he's talking. He's not serious. So some of the Bali Musar say, you know what it means? It means for those 5 minutes, they're going to be in doubt. Obviously, at the end of the day, it's game, set, match. It's over. But for those 5 minutes... And so the Gemara tells you something amazing. Da Amar Mar, the master taught, therefore, Lamad Lashon Cholomar Eini Odea. Teach your lips your tongue to say, I don't know. Shema, maybe. Tisvade v'teyaches. You'll make a mistake and you'll be caught. You make a suggestion. It turns out the suggestion is wrong, but you present it as if you knew, but you didn't know. How amazing is that, Gemara? Moshe Rabbeinu, who mamish knew, and the Rebbeinu Shel mamish knew. But because of the perception of the other person, even to that extent, he should say, I'm not sure. I'm not certain. You know, sometimes we'll discuss an issue, a Gemara, a halacha, and it seems incandescently clear. And yet, the Gemara is telling us, don't be so sure. Yes, of course, the Gemara tells us elsewhere, v'shinantam levanecha, it should be sharp, you should know the answers, you shouldn't hem and haw, but you should be careful. Moshe Rabbeinu was told by God, but the way that it was going to come across might not be perceived as certain and accurate. Sigara, the Gemara says, Lamad Lashoncha, should be careful to be cautious and to say Eini Yodea. So why do you have to be cautious to say Eini Yodea? Because the Gemara says, Shema, maybe, Tisbada, you'll make a mistake, Viteyachiz. So the Meiri says in his commentary, in this Gemara Brachos, Ela im kein hadavar bar below shum pikbuk. If there's no ambiguity, there's no shaila, there's not even a scintilla of doubt, then okay. But otherwise, shema tisbadeh. Maybe you'll be wrong. Could you say absolutely with certainty that your advice is the right move? That your assessment is correct? So I think there's one level of this idea, which is our theme today, of knowing that we don't know, which is on a practical level. Because if we think we know things that we don't, and we start commenting on them, we might be exposed to being wrong. Shema tisbaz v'teyachas, we'll be caught. We'll be caught in our mistake. Rashi tells us we should know how to say, I don't know. And so the Gemara tells us the first reason to say, I don't know, is because we want to protect ourselves against overexposure, that we will be found out to know things, to not know the things that we present and we pretend that we do know. Good?
It's not shameful.
It's not shameful, exactly. Great. Any Odea, that's totally fine. But perhaps there's a deeper level. This first approach to I don't know is very practical, and it's self-serving. It's utilitarian. It says, know your limitations so you won't be exposed and wrong. Great. But there's something much deeper. You know that the founder of Chassidus, the holy Baal Shem HaKadosh, he had a son and a daughter. His daughter's name was Adel. Adel stands for Aleph Dalet Lamed, Eish Das Lamo. Adel, which literally means fine, right? Refined. So you can imagine if you were going to be the son-in-law of the Baal Shem Tov, what kind of bechina you would get, what kind of exam. Right, you would sit down at the kitchen table in Mezhbish. So there was a young man, his name was Rabbi Yechiel, who was proposed to be the husband, the future husband of Adel, the daughter of the Baal Shem. So the Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh, he had a very close disciple. His name was Rabbi Yaakov Yosef. Rabbi Yaakov Yosef of Polonia, his nickname was the Toldos because he wrote the Sefer called Toldos Yaakov Yosef. He records many of the teachings of the Baal Shem Tov. So the Baal Shem HaKadosh, he asked Rabbi Yaakov Yosef, could you go check out this boy? Check him out. So he comes back to the Baal Shem HaKadosh, and the Baal Shem says to him, Nu, what's he like? So Rabbi Yaakov Yosef goes, I asked him about this part of Halacha. He says, you know, I don't know, I'm not sure. He could say this, maybe he could say that. I asked him about this part of Torah. He says, I don't know. I asked him about Nigla and Nister. I asked him about every topic I could think of. And each topic he said, I mamish don't know. So Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh said to him, was there maybe one topic that he said, confidently, certainly, I know this? And the Toldos said, no. So what did Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh say? That's right. That's our man. That's our man. Because perhaps the greatest mida that a person could have is the mida of anava. If you look in the Orchas Tzadikim, they talk about core midos. The first mida is the mida of anava versus the worst mida, the primary problematic mida, is the mida of gaiva. That's why the Rambam says that gaiva and kas, which are correlated, anger and hubris, arrogance, are things that we have to be absolutely extreme in our distance from them. Because humility is all about self-awareness. That is the core of all midos. And the Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh is saying, yeah, go ahead.
Then we bring it to like our own life. And we say, all right, you know, you tell your kids, I'm not sure, but it seems to me that, old man, what do you know? Now you've actually not guided them when you're supposed to.
Oh, good, perfect. So this is very helpful in this Nakuda, what Glenn is raising, the issue of anava. Anava is not saying that I'm a nobody. That's very important, because oftentimes mistaken or misplaced humility is actually destructive. It might even be one of the most destructive things, because it can eat away at a certain self-esteem, which is, if you take away your self-esteem, that's one of the most unhealthy things to do from a spiritual standpoint. There was a story, I'll just give you one parenthetical story, Rabbi Cheskel Abramsky, when he was a dayan, a rabbinical judge in England during the war years and shortly after. So he was called at some point to appear before a British court to testify about an issue that was relevant to the Jewish community. So the judge said to Dayan Abramsky, could you please take the stand? So he takes the stand, and the barrister, the lawyer, says to him, laying it out, he says to him, Rabbi Abramsky, are you the most senior and authoritative law arbiter? Posig! Are you the greatest posig in England? And Rabbi Cheskel Abramsky said, yes, sir, I am. So the judge leaned over and said, Rabbi, don't they teach you about humility? So he looked at him, he said, with a chuckle, he said, Your Honor, I'm under oath. Right? The point of the story is that humility does not mean not understanding who you are. But this is the deep teaching. So when it comes to parents, parenting, to say, oh, I don't know anything, I have nothing to offer to my children, at the same time, to pretend to our children that we know every answer to every question, these are both sides of the same coin of anava, of humility. And this is exactly the nakuda. It's not to say I don't know. There's a practical element, like the Gemara says in Brachos. But it's not a practical inyan. It's really a deeper inyan that reflects a profound anava to understand our true selves. Who are we? And what our limitations are? How much do we really know? How much do we really know about the world? We think we know based on the information that we get, but how much do we really know? How much do we know about the Ribono Shel Olam? How much do we know about ourselves even? So Baal Shem Tov says, I'm looking for a young man who has the ultimate self-awareness, who recognizes that there's not one thing in the world that they really, really know. And if we take a few moments to sit with that, we'll realize the exact same thing. There's nothing in the world that we really know with certainty. Maybe the only thing that we know in the deepest part of our being is that there is a God. But more than that, what do we really know? Even ourselves. This is true on a practical level. If you think about the extent, epistemology, the history and the study of the kind of knowledge that we have, the Gemara tells us in Chagiga that there are certain questions that we don't ask. What is above the universe? What's below the universe? What's before the universe? What's after the universe? So the Rambam has a really interesting comment in the Pirush HaMishnayos, because the Rambam, remember, was a philosopher. So the Rambam says that if a person thinks about certain things that they're not capable, that their mind can't grasp, do you know what happened to such a person? that person would end up shigaon v'shimamon. Shigaon literally means insanity, right? A person, if we try to grasp things that we can't grasp with the tools that we have, it would lead us to shigaon, insanity. It would lead us to craziness. We have to understand that there are certain things that we can't grasp because they're beyond us because of our limited human faculties. And then there are certain things that we can't grasp because they're just too deep. There's a Gemara here in Sanhedrin, Daf Lamed Tes. The Gemara had a discussion, a story, a lot of stories this morning. A story of an interaction between what the Gemara calls a kofer and Rabbi Gamliel. This kofer, this heretic, he was discussing different things with Rabbi Gamliel. They were having a back and forth. So he says to Rabbi Gamliel, Yadana Elohaichu Maka Ovid. I know what your God is doing. I can tell you about God, he says to Rabbi Gamliel. And Rabbi Gamliel, remember, think about his personality. The Gemara tells us in Brachos that Rabbi Gamliel was such a strong personality that when he paskined that Yom Kippur is on a certain date and Rabbi Yeshua debated him and the psak was going to follow him because he was the Nasi, he insisted that Rabbi Yeshua appear in front of him on Yom Kippur of Rabbi Yeshua's calculation, which was not Yom Kippur on his calculation. He has to drive up in his Camry, get out of the car, light a fire, cook breakfast, like every violation you could imagine, because he said, "Snak Yom Kippur." He was ultimately confident. But yet, that doesn't mean that he doesn't know to say Eini Yodea, to say that there are certain things that we can't know, that are just too deep. And this goes back to your point. If we have to make a decision in a Beis Din, if we have to make a rule, and we need one for everybody, what day is Yom Kippur, then we're not going to waver. But does it mean that we are absolutely certain? Not necessarily, but it doesn't matter, because life is not built on absolute certainty. We accept two witnesses in a court. Does that mean that guarantees certainty? No, that's what the Torah says is the threshold of acceptability for credibility in moving forward with life, because there's always going to be a need to move forward. But we have to recognize there's always a sense of understanding of what do we not know. So the guy says to Rabbi Gamliel, he says, "I'm going to tell you what God is doing right now." Okay, you know? Rabbi Gamliel, isnagid v'isnach. He passed out. He krechts. He had such a visceral reaction. Amalei, my high. So the kofer says to him, "Why do you have such a crazy reaction? Why are you fainting? Why are you krechtsing? What's the big deal? What do you mean? I can tell you." So Amalei says, okay. Amalei, ben echad yesh li bekarche hayam. Amalei says, "I have a son who lives out of town. Bekarche hayam, in the other side of the ocean. V'yesh li gaguim olav, and I miss him. I'm sad. I want to connect to him. Be'ina demachvisli ne'ali. Could you show him to me? Could you tell me where he is right now? What is he up to? I'd feel much better if I knew where my kid was. You know, it's 12:30 at night, and my kid is off bekarche hayam. I'd feel much better to know where he is. Could you tell me?" Amar mar yadina hechaniu. Can you tell me where he is? So he says, Amar mi yadina hechaniu. So the kofer says, the heretic says, "I don't know where he is. How am I supposed to know where he is?" So Rabbi Gamliel says, Amalei, deika ba'ara lo yadis. You don't know what's going on this earth. Deika b'shmaya yadis. What's going on in the shamayim, in the heavens, that you know. That you know? To understand that we don't know. That there are certain things that are beyond us. That's truly understanding ourselves. And think about that for a second. De'ika ba'ara yadis. Do we know the origins of this pandemic, where it really, really started? I don't know. Do we know how it really operates? How it really transmits? You ask the world's greatest experts. Deika ba'ara, that's what's going on in the world. And we have greater scientific knowledge than ever in the history of humankind. But I bet that in 100 years, they're going to laugh at us. And they're going to say, you didn't realize you were running around with masks? You didn't realize that it translates based on this genome sequence or this, like, what are you guys? You don't know anything. So there's a limit to how much we know ba'ara. But in the realm of the Shemaya, to think that we really know, we don't know anything. We can't know. It's beyond us. Lemod l'shoncha, lomar eini yodea, it's much deeper than the practical side. It's on the side of understanding ourselves and who we are and what our limitations are. And that doesn't mean that we're nothing. It doesn't mean we don't have self-esteem. But it means that we need to understand our limits. And we need to act accordingly with anava, with humility, which is all about self-awareness, true self-awareness. Understanding that we are a neshama, and vis-a-vis HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we can't really even be masig what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is. There's a great Chassidus Shavart that a friend of mine, my dear colleague, my dear friend, my Chaver Tov, special friend, Rabbi Eli Michel, shared with me. I've quoted him before. So he said a Chassidus Shavart, and I don't remember who it was in the name of. He said, we say it to Seder, the She'enu Yodea Lishol, Ad Pesachlo. So a great Vart is, She'enu Yodea, the person doesn't know, Lishol, and they're asking, and they say, look, I don't know. I'm okay. I'm comfortable with myself to say, I don't know this. Then at psachlo, they open to him the aleph all the way till the tough. If you're humble enough to know that you don't know, the doors are open to learn everything. But the minute that we think that we know, then the doors are closed. Then we're not close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's why that first midah, that midah of anava, is really the core. So, I bring this up. Why are we talking about the importance of saying Eini Yodea? Because of today's letter, which I'm not going to bother to give to you. It was written by a man, an attorney, who received his law degree from Columbia, and he was a district judge in New York. His name was Simon H. Rifkind. And he was a member of the executive board of JTS, the United Jewish Appeal, the American Jewish Committee. He was a choshev balabas. He was a lawyer and a very choshev balabas. So when Ben-Gurion sent out his letters, he sent out to Rabbanim, to thinkers. He also sent out to choshev balabatim. So he sends to this balabas, this lawyer in New York, who died not too long ago. He died in 1994.
Part of the famous law firm, Paul Weiss Rifkind.
That's him?
Yeah.
There you have it. Famous law firm.
Yeah.
This guy, Simon Rifkind. So he says, you sent me this letter, a Choshva letter, right? After much reflection, I have concluded that I am not qualified to express an opinion deserving of consideration. How about that? You're asked one of the weightiest, most consequential questions of the generation, and you have the humility, the godless, to say, you know what? I don't know.
Did you stop there?
I have been immersed for these many years in practice under a system of law, right, you have to worry about that, in which the question you propose will be regarded as irrelevant. So he says, and this is exactly the inyan of Anova. He says, I'm a bucky in law. I'm not saying I'm a nobody. I'm not saying I don't have anything to contribute. I'm a gavra. I have self-esteem. I went to law school. I learned. I'm an expert. But that doesn't mean that I'm an expert at everything. What I'm an expert in, it's not no gaya to this. Consequently, I have never had occasion to evaluate the considerations which should have a substantial weight in arriving at a judgment in this manner. In short, I lack confidence in the views which superficially appear to me right, and under these circumstances, I am sure that what I would say would not contribute to the solution of your problem, period. What a guttle. Respectfully and sincerely yours, Simon H. Rifkind. What a guttle. He says, I have thoughts. I have thoughts about this question. And I've been trained in law. But in this inyan, I know to say Eini Yodea when you have such a big question. What an amazing hara, right? And that's why I wanted to talk about it today. Because it relates to how we live and the importance of focusing on this midah of anava, of really understanding, of self-awareness. And when we think about what happened last week, lo aleinu, the neshama should have an aliyah. I saw someone was circulating a letter from the Gaon Rav Chaim Kanievsky this week, who starts the letter by saying, we don't know and we can't know. Who can know such a thing? We have to know to say Eini Yodea. Could someone purport to know? When we encounter things like this, we have to have that perspective. But even on a day-to-day basis, forget about such cosmic and challenging and overwhelming events. But let's talk about anava of saying Eini Yodea on a day-to-day level. I once heard a great vort. I don't remember where I heard this from. You know, the Mishnah says in Pirkei Avos, Al toden es chavercha ad shetagia l'mekomo. Don't judge your fellow until you reach their place ad shetagia l'mekomo. So I once heard a great vort. Do you ever reach the place where your friend is? Can you ever get to that place of understanding? Can you ever put yourselves in their shoes to the extent that you have the same experience in how they grew up and what their family dynamic was like and what their life experience has been and what have they been exposed to and what has influenced them and what their genetic makeup predisposes them to? Is it ever shayach lagia l'mekomo? Impossible. So don't judge people. Because you have to understand, eini yodea. When it comes bein adam l'chaveiro, I don't know. And you know what? It makes us so much happier. It makes us so much happier that to live bein adam l'chaveiro with an eini yodea perspective. Great story about the Heilige Reb Zusha, the Rebbe Reb Zusha of Anipoli. So there was a rabbi who Nebuch, he was a little farbissen. He was a bitter guy. He wasn't very happy. So he came to talk to Reb Zusha. And he said, Reb Zusha, you're always so happy, and I'm always so bitter. I'm always so resentful. I wanna figure this out. Why am I so resentful? So Reb Zusha says, Holy Rabbi, let me tell you a story. I'll tell you the truth. He says, when you get invited to a wedding, what happens? Maybe the following happened to you. A guy comes from the Balabas in Europe. He comes with a piece of paper with all the lists of the invitees. And they come to your house, Rabbi so-and-so. And the guy who says, are you Rabbi so-and-so? So the rabbi says, yes. So he says, the chash of a Balabas, Ploni Almoni, is inviting you to his wedding. Shmerel is making a wedding. He wants to invite you. And you, the Balabas, and you, the Rav, you, Rabbi, you see on the paper that you're number 14 on the list of invitees. You think to yourself, I'm a chash of a rabbi. I should be number 14 on a list of invites. I should have been at least in the top 5 draft picks. Number 14? So you say, you know what? The guy's not machshav me anyway. I'm going to come late. Why should I show up on time? He wasn't machshav me. So in those days, remember, they didn't even solder everything exactly in advance the way we do today. So the wedding was called for 5 o'clock. At 5 o'clock, they look around, and the rabbi's not there. So they say, okay, they'll ask someone else to be in the Masada Kedushin. The rabbi shows up 7, 8 o'clock, and he figures everybody's going to be, you know, waiting for him. It's Chashev Rabbi. We're Chashev. Meanwhile, they did the chuppah. They started the meal. Everyone's sitting. The rabbi looks at the dais. Dais is full. There's no seats left. There's not a place to sit. So meanwhile, Everyone's having a good time. So he's like, okay, fine. He pulls up a chair from one back table. You know that table at the wedding? You know, table, you know, 37 near the door. It's good for a quick exit, but maybe it's not the closest table. There are usually 3-4 extra seats there. So the guy pulls up a plate over there. Suke sits down. Meanwhile, everybody's having a good time. The Baal Bus is walking around. He sees him. He says, oh, Rabbi, welcome. Shalom Aleichem. I'm so happy you're here. So happy you're here. Rabbi says, oh, I'm so glad to be here. He says, Rabbi, did you get a plate? I see you haven't been served. Rabbi says, no, not yet. Meanwhile, the guy runs to the kitchen because the waiter who's walking around, he already finished serving. Meanwhile, all the kitchen staff is eating. What do they have left? They have like, no?
Scraps.
They have the scraps. The items that were the big ticket at the Shmorg, let's just say those are gone. You know, the giant onion rings and the lamb chops, that, genug, there's nothing, that's enough. You don't have that anymore. So they take a few pieces, you know, the half-eaten, like the dark meat piece of the chicken that somebody didn't get to, so half a pulkas, so they put it on a plate, he gives it to the waiter brings it out, but meanwhile the rabbi's sitting there, and they put down this plate, and the rabbi, now he's really upset, who eats this? This is not, you know, bakavadik. So he starts eating, but because he's at table 37, the Baal Bas is busy at his simcha. So when it comes time to bench, he looks at the dais and he says, oh, so-and-so, you're going to bench. Meanwhile, the rabbi, he comes home, he's angry at himself, he's angry at his wife, he's angry at his kids, he's all farbissen. Reb Zusha, he says, Rabbi, when I get invited to a wedding, I say, I can't believe you invited me. I'm not such a chash of a guy. I'm a simple Jew, Zusha. If you invite me to a wedding, well, let me tell you, I better be there on time. Because you're such a covet, I should be invited to your wedding. So he says, so Zusha comes, Reb Zusha would never say I, because he was so humble. I mean, mamish. So Reb Zusha says to the guy, he says, I come to the wedding at 5 minutes to 5. I get there 5 minutes early because I don't want to disrespect the guy. He invites me. So I get there at 5 to 5, and at 5:15, when the Masada Kedushin doesn't show up, they say, okay, Reb Zusha, you'll be the Masada Kedushin. I say, me? They say, well, there's nobody else. So they make me the Masada Kedushin, and then they sit me down on the dais, and I get a nice meal to eat, and I come home, and I'm happy with myself, I'm happy with my wife, my children, I'm all happy. Reb Zusha says it's about anava. It's about knowing ourselves and our place. To know ourselves. We don't know. Do we know what that guy's cheshbon is? Why he put the first 14 people on that list? Right? So many times we get, I shouldn't speak for other people, and I shouldn't say lashon hara about myself, but it's obvious that, you know, regular people do this, so I don't think the Chavetz Chaim would be upset that I would acknowledge that happens to me. Why do I get upset about something? Why do I get frustrated? Why do I feel put down? Because I figure everything out. I think I know what I would expect. I know what all the cheshbonos are, so I know why I should be number 5 on the list. But if I said to myself, you don't know, do you really know? If I asked myself that question, if I got curious and said, do you really know everything that's going on over there? Do you know about that invite list? Do you know what it's like to make a wedding or a bar mitzvah or a simcha during Corona? How complicated it is, who gets invited, how do you get invited? Do you know, maybe there are people who are much closer to them than you are that you don't even know. You think you're such a miyo de ama. But it comes from thinking that we know. So bein adam l'chaveiro derech avodo, to be mechazik ourselves, to say, I don't know. I don't know why I didn't get invited or I did get invited. I don't know why I ended up, you know, yamin aram, the gabai. Mamish, to be a gabai, it's unbelievable mesiris nefesh. You get a lot of olam haba for that. A lot more than the malamed, like us, the teachers, we just teach Torah, but the Gabon, you suffer bizyonis. It's a much bigger level to suffer bizyonis. That's why shul rabbis also get a lot of schar, because they also suffer a lot of bizyonis. So much bizyonis. Why? Because the guy who got put in the third row in the seating chart, you know, God forbid the guy who got put in row LL. You know what I mean? KK. When you're in the double letters, it's like at the baseball game. When you're in the double letters for the high holiday seats, you're thinking to yourself, I thought I was a dues-paying chosh of a member. What about me? Well, what about maybe the person, what am I seat last year? Maybe the person who's in that seat Maybe they can't hear well anymore. And the God had put them over there. At the end of the day, we would live such better, happier lives if we just said to ourselves, Eini Yodea. Bein Odom L'Chavero. Reb Zusha says, we'd be happier. We'd be better off. Because Al Todes Chavera Shatagim L'Kom, we'll never get L'Mekomo. That's Aleph. But Beis, in our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Ribbono Shel Olam, he tells us, Tov As Hashem Kol Gevah Lev. You'll excuse me for saying it, but he says it. I can't stand being with people who are arrogant. He says, I can't stand it. The Baal Shem HaKadosh in the Keser Shem Tov, and the Sfasemis repeats this, many Chassidus Sfarim point this out, the difference between Yesh and Ayin, something that is and something that isn't. Aleph Yud Nun, Ayin. It's nothing. So the Baal Shem HaKadosh says, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu looks at you and you say, Ribbono Shel Olam, to you, I'm Ayin, I'm nothing. Then he says, I'll have a lot of space here for me. But if you say, Ribbono Shel Olam, I'm Yesh, I'm a somebody. Then he says, there's not enough space. It's Dochek Ragle Shechina, the Gemara says. You're pushing God away. Where do we see this most? In davening. In davening. If I think I know everything, and I know all of the cosmos, I come to the Baal Shem and I say, Magiali, you know, I have a list, and this is what is Magia to me, and I know that this is how it's supposed to be, and this is what it's supposed to look like. As opposed to coming to davening and saying, Ribbono Shalom, I'm Ayin, I'm nothing. Which, by the way, the Sfasema says, the more that a person realizes that Klapei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they're nothing, that means they're mamish to somebody. Right? If you think you're a nobody, you're a gadol. If you think Eini Yodea, when you come to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I can't grasp the Ribbono Shalom in any way, shape, or form, to any extent, then you're a gadol. So there's a beautiful sefer called the Yosher Divrei Emes. It was the Talmud of the Mizritcher Magid. So he says, you know that a simen of good davening is a feeling of humility, of a feeling of, you know, I'm in my place. That's a simen of good davening. Because you felt like you were in the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And to be mamish in the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what does that generate? It generates a feeling of, oh my gosh, wow. You're the source of everything. Hakol bakol, akol yochol v'kol olam yochad. Wow. It's overwhelming. And to realize, wow, I really don't know. I think this is what's important. I think this is what I need. And you told me this through the words of Chazal. So I'm asking you, God, please help me raise my children right. Please help give me a proper parnasa. Please help me navigate all the complicated situations in the world. Help me. Because A, I don't really know how. Ani lo yodea. And the truth is, I say to the Ribbono Shel Olam, I'm only using these words because I don't have any other words. Because even this, I don't know. I'm asking you for this thing. And then you said no. But ani lo yodea. Of course I'm broken. And this is where we started. Of course I'm broken. How many times have we had an experience of davening for someone? And the Ribbono Shel Olam said no. Said no. So of course we're broken. And we look at this calamitous event. And we say, we're mamish broken. These families. Someone told me yesterday that there were more than 600 people sitting Shiva. Just do the numbers. Because all the people, Rahmanul Islam, who lost their lives were young people. So they had children and parents and siblings, 45 neshamas, 600 plus avelim. So we say, Ribbono Shel Olam. But when we say to him, you know, the closer we are to you, we realize we don't know. Ani lo yodea. The ikar of davening is not asking. The ikar of davening is being close to Hashem. So we say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in davening, this is what our eyes see. This is what we are asking for. And we're asking for you because you're everything. But the truth is, you know best. And if we walk away from davening with a little more humility, with a little more understanding of the greatness of the world and how impossible it is for us to understand. So that the Yosha Divra Emes, he says, that's a simon of good davening. we experience a tragedy like this, it reminds us not to feel weak or to feel helpless, but to feel humble. To feel like we're connected to a God who controls everything, and that when we daven, it gives us great strength because we're tapping into that. But at the same time, it's that sense of Eini Yodea, I don't know. So we talked today about the practical side of Eini Yodea, that we might make mistakes, but we also talked about the fundamental point that Eini Yodea gets to anava, humility, our self-awareness, our true inner self, and then al derech avoda, leading our lives with the Eini Yodea, with not knowing bein adam lachaveiro, in terms of how we interact with others, and how we assess these interactions, and also, of course, bein adam lamakom, when we address HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to recognize that place of Eini Yodea, and that hopefully these two approaches, al derech avoda, they'll actually give us a good life, a more fulfilled and meaningful life in the way that we interact with others and that we interact with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Because to think that we know in a Bein Adam Lamakom is the ultimate destruction. It's the ultimate gaiva. It'll tear us down. And therefore, being close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, holding on to Him and feeling that He's holding on to us even though we don't know, that's the most beautiful way to navigate even a very, very challenging and tragic circumstance like this.